We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 12. Actually, going to read a couple verses into chapter 11. Remember when, like 3 years ago, what Tiger Woods was? He was winning just about every golf tournament he had ever entered. It wasn't a question if he would do well. It was a matter of if he was going to win or come in second or third. He had endorsement deals like crazy. At one point, he was the world's wealthiest athlete. He is the only golfer to ever crack the top 10. And he became the world's most wealthy athlete. You know, he had endorsement deals with Nike and Gillette, and everything just seemed to be going his way. You know, he was popular, he had lots of money, he seemed to be a pretty good guy. You know, no one really knew he had any kind of moral issues going on, and he, you know, just had it all together. You know, and then a couple years ago, you know, all the things that he, you know, he'd been cheating on his wife constantly. He's not been the same man since. You know, no one really thinks he's going to win a golf tournament anymore. It's if he's going to make the cut. And like Players Championship had just been on. He was just trying to survive. He doesn't have endorsement deals anymore. He lost 3/4 of his wealth in a divorce. He's just not the same person that he was. And I was thinking about King Solomon, and I was trying to think of a nice parallel between King, you know, how we could relate to King Solomon. And King Solomon follows that description to a T. He was wealthy at the beginning of his life. He followed God. He didn't have any type of issues going on. No one would dare attack him. He made silver essentially worthless because he had so much gold that people didn't even want to trade silver. He had peace. People were coming to him from all the world to see him. And God gave him a warning pretty early in his reign. He said, you know, don't make your army big. And don't mess around with women. And he did both. And by the end of Solomon's life, it says that the women that he had married, he had over 1,000 women that he was involved with, he started building temples to their gods. He started worshiping their gods to where everything he had at the beginning of his reign was gone by the end. By the end of his reign, he was taxing the people heavily. People were fighting him. All because he walked away from God. In 1 Kings chapter 12, we talk about what came after his reign. And it starts in chapter 11. We're actually going to read verse 43 first. It says, "Then Solomon rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father. And Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his place. And Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all of Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So it happened that Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard it. He was still in Egypt, for he had fled from the presence of King Solomon and had been living in Egypt. That they sent and called him. Then Jeroboam and the whole assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy. Therefore lighten the burdensome service of your father and the heavy yoke which he put upon us, and we will serve you.' So he said to them, 'Depart from me 3 days and come back to me.' And the people departed. So he said to them, 'Depart.'" I'm sorry, read that verse already. "Then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived. And he said, 'How would you advise me to answer these people?' And they spoke to him saying, 'If you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever.' But he rejected the advice of the elders which he had given him and consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who served before him. And he said to them, 'What advice do you give? How should we answer these people who have spoken to me, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us'?' Then the young men who had grown up with him spoke to him, saying, 'Thus you should speak to these people who have spoken to you, saying, "Your father made our yoke heavy, but make it lighter on us." Thus you will say to them, "My little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. Now whereas my father put a heavy yoke upon you, I will add to your yoke. And I will, my father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So Jeroboam and all the people came back to Rehoboam the third day, as the king had directed, saying, come back to me on the third day. Then the king answered the people roughly and rejected the advice of that the elders had given him. And he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men. My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I shall chastise you with scorpions. So the king did not listen to the people, for the turn of events was from the Lord, that he might fulfill his word which the Lord had spoken by Ahijah the Shilonite to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. Now when all Israel saw the king did not listen to them, the people answered and said, what share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel, now see to your own house, O David. So Israel departed to their tents, but Rehoboam reigned over the children of Israel who dwelt in the cities of Judah. Then King Rehoboam sent Adoram, who was in charge of the king's revenue, but all Israel stoned him with stones and he died. Therefore King Rehoboam mounted his chariot in haste to flee. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. It's a lot of reading there. We'll break that story down, and then we'll make some points of application. King Solomon, by the end of his reign, as we had already mentioned, had pretty much lost control. God goes to him and says, Solomon, if it weren't for your father David and my regard for him, I would wipe out you and your descendants and start over. But because I love David, I honor him, I'm going to have your son, one of your sons will always be king. To that, and he actually told Solomon that this guy Jeroboam is going to come in and he's going to take most of the kingdom away. So Solomon, rather than consenting to the Lord, decides he's going to go kill that guy. Guy runs away. Solomon eventually dies. Rehoboam's on the scene. He's supposed to be king, right? He's Solomon's son. People come out to him and say, look, your father is kind of a jerk. He taxes too much. He took too much of our stuff in slavery. He was a jerk. Be a better king than him, and we'll serve you forever. He takes, you know, he's like, hey, give me 3 days. Let me think about it. And he talks to two different groups of people. He talks to the people who had served his father. Says, hey, what do you think? They say, don't be a jerk, and they'll like you forever. He's like, nah, I don't want to do that. Goes to the younger people, people who served him. He says, well, what do you think? Well, they say don't be a jerk. Tell them you're going to be a bigger jerk. Takes that advice. Goes to all of Israel and says, look, if you thought you had it bad under Solomon, you ain't seen nothing yet. Then Israel says, fine, we don't want you as our king. And they walk away. Rehoboam tries to bring them back, and they kill everyone that Rehoboam sends out. And so, as it says at the end of the verse there, most of the people of Israel were in rebellion. How it split was about 10.5 tribes went and never served David again. About 1.5 hung around with David. That's the story here. Middle of nowhere in the book of Kings. But I think there's a lot that we can learn. And I think the first lesson, and we'll have three, is that God gives us counselors in our lives. If you read verses 6 and 7, it talks about, and they spoke to him saying, if you will be a servant to this people today and serve them and speak good words to them, they will be your servants forever. But verse 6 as well, he consulted the elders who stood before his father, Solomon. Throughout your life, whether you're 5 years old, whether you're a teenager, whether you're even adults, it seems like everyone wants to kind of tell you how to live your life. You can get advice from the media. Celebrities will tell you what they think. I know that we just passed the amendment banning gay marriage in our Constitution, and Clay Aiken feels the need to tell me how I should feel. Like, I don't care. But the celebrities feel that they should put their opinion out there and that you should value their opinion just because they're celebrities. Media will do it. People around you. Everyone wants to give you their idea about how you should live. The problem is, half those people don't know what they're talking about. Of what's left, a lot of them don't fear God. And so they could never tell you what God wanted you to do. And then what's left is they might even have your best interest in mind. But when the king here, he goes to the elders first, which sounds like a good story. Here's our people who had served King Solomon. They knew what they were doing. They had served as king, you know, advised the king for 40 years. Most of them feared God. There are stories in the Bible where they're trying to put the brakes on Solomon and what he's up to. And they have no ulterior motive here. How it worked is if you serve the king, his son comes along, you're done. You retire, have a nice life, you're through, you're great. It's kind of like, you know, when our president's done, you know, he's done. You can't come back in the office. And so it starts off really good for the king here that he goes to the people who know what they're doing, who fear God, and have no ulterior motive. And they give him the advice that, hey, Solomon, your dad, not the best king toward the end. Maybe you should listen to him. He rejects that advice. And it's not just that he listened to old people. And, you know, he didn't listen to the old people, listen to young people. But he goes to the young people, and their problem is that they serve him. You know what happens when you don't tax the people so much? There's less revenue into the kingdom, which means your parties can't be quite as lavish. You can't quite have all the things that you had before. And so he goes to people who had never ever reigned, never ever been king, never ever been practiced being king, and he asks them their advice. So not only do they not know what they're doing, but they have an ulterior motive. If tax revenue goes down, they can't live the life they want. They want to live a life of luxury and ease like Solomon did. And so they tell him, whoa, 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 you can't lower taxes. You can't make things easier on the people. And so he listens to the wrong people. The Bible is clear. Proverbs chapter 1, blessed is he who walks in the counsel of the godly, walks in the counsel of the righteous, but doesn't walk in the counsel of the unrighteous or sit in the seat of the scornful. The people who we take advice from, their decisions will influence us. Now, I am 32 years old, and you would think I had to get over the fact that I don't want to listen to my parents, but I don't. I was talking to my dad the other day, and he coached baseball and softball, wow, for like 30 years. Like when my sisters were little, he was a coach for them. When my brother and I were growing up, he coached us, taught us how to catch, taught us how to hit a ball, did all of that, right? I gave up baseball like when I was 13. I don't know if I've ever picked up a bat since. This is probably why it's a good thing I'm not on the softball team. But I was talking to him not long ago about Anna, and he was giving me all these suggestions about, you know, hey, do this, do that. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, what do you know? Like, I don't want to listen to my dad. I don't want to admit that he knows. And so I understand why we don't want to listen to our parents. That, I don't know that feeling ever completely goes away. I think as you grow up, you learn to appreciate them a whole lot more than you do when you're young. But in general, they fit the things we need as a counselor. A lot of our parents fear God. A lot of them, you know, they care about you. You know, I never have to go to my dad and think that he's angling on, you know, he's trying to get something out of me. It's not how my parents have ever operated. And then, as much as I hate to say it, they know, in general, what they're talking about. It's amazing. You know, my dad, he lived a really rough life growing up, and I still didn't want to go to him for advice about things like relationships and drinking and all those things. But God has given us those people for a reason. The pastor, your youth leaders, Sunday school teachers, these are people that God has placed in our lives that when we have decisions to make, that we can trust will give godly counsel. And we're fools if we don't take advantage of that. I don't have an ulterior motive to tell you to do anything. And so be careful. And it goes for young people. It goes for people my age and older. Be careful who you take advice from. People you associate with. 1 Corinthians 14:6 says, don't be unequally yoked of unbelievers. Meaning, don't be so bound to them that their life and their ideas and their thoughts become yours. And you see how it led to disaster here. The second point I think we get here in this story is that our decisions have a lasting impact. It's easy to think that, you know, hey, one bad decision may not matter. It mattered for him. Look at verse 19. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. For 600 years, this one decision that Rehoboam decided he's not going to be a good king, essentially, led to 600 years of war and strife in these people. Now, the only reason it was 600 years is because then they were destroyed. People of Israel never recovered from this decision. They never became a people, one nation again for a very long time. This decision to rebel, to not listen to godly advice, led to hundreds of years of rebellion. And if you know anything about the history of Israel, the tribes that left David turned their back on God and never looked back. They never came back to the temple of God to worship. They built their own idols, and they walked away from God, and they never, as a nation, ever again worshiped God. And it's because of this. I like to read. I read a lot of the classics. I was reading Three Musketeers. And kind of near the beginning of that book, D'Artagnan picks a fight with the three main characters in the book other than him. The three best musketeers, he actually gets into a duel to the death with all three of them. Like, he's got to fight them. They're out there. They're ready to fight. He's going to fight Athos, Porthos, and Aramaeus in that order. And then the three musketeers' enemies come, and they're going to arrest them because dueling has been outlawed, but, you know, people still did it. And so there's five guys coming to arrest these three, and the three musketeers draw their swords, and D'Artagnan is left in the middle. He can walk away. He can choose to fight these three guys that he had picked a fight with, or he can choose to join up with the three musketeers, right? In that moment, he's going to make a decision that will affect the rest of his life. If he chooses to arrest the musketeers, he will never be one, right? Because that was his goal. If he fights with them, he's a lawbreaker, and he's got to choose sides right then. That decision will impact the rest of his life. And we all make those decisions, not on a daily basis, but there are decisions that come in our lives that will impact not only us, but the people around us forever. It's not just we can just blow off these decisions. When Daniel was taken into captivity, he had to choose whether he was going to eat all the polluted food that God told him not to, or to eat things that were clean. And that decision to eat things that were clean led to him essentially being ruler over the people of Babylon. And so it's sometimes you're not going to know what that decision is. It could be something trifling. Maybe it's something like where you're going to go to school. You know, are you going to major in accounting, or are you going to major in computers? I mean, decisions like that. Those decisions have a lasting impact on us and on others, and we need to take those decisions seriously, and then also in a way that pleases God. I'm sick of reading about stories of teenagers drunk driving at a high school party and killing themselves and and others. What seems to be a small decision to have a drink destroys lives. On the other hand, you know, smart decisions can impact people forever. A couple coworkers of mine are involved in Durham Prison, rehabilitating those people. Small decisions to get involved, to invest in some guy's life, lead to a complete turnaround of a guy who had no hope to a guy who now has a place to live and a job and is drug-free. And so the decision we make, both good and bad, go well beyond our lives. And then lastly, and most importantly, is that God has a plan for you in the world. And we'll read, and here it says, when he rejected the advice, verse 15, so the king did not listen to the people, for the turn of the events was from the Lord, that he might fulfill his word which he had spoken. God had a plan in this situation. God was going to take the kingdom away from Solomon at some point. Didn't have to be here. God just chose it to be. The scriptures say over in James chapter 3, verse 13 to 15, it talks about, come now, you who say, we will go to this city for a year, and we will trade and make a profit. It says, when you don't know what your life will be like tomorrow, you should say, if the Lord wills, we will go to that city and we will trade and make a profit. The Lord is very clear. He has a plan for this world and for you as an individual. Verses like John 3:16, for God so loved the world, he sent his son. He had a plan. I'm not really into soccer, but I've been watching the Champions League. Don't know if anyone cares about soccer at all, but it was their huge tournament. Champions League, European final, Chelsea and Munich were going to play. Before that game, Chelsea had to get through Barcelona. Their best player on Chelsea, a guy named John Henry, best player arguably on the field, about 3 minutes into that game, he gets red carded, which means he gets sent off of that game. His team has to play a man down that game, and he misses the next game. He makes a stupid foul. Chelsea somehow wins this game. It's incredible. They come from down two. Everything goes their way. They eventually come even. They eventually win that game. And while the rest of the team is celebrating a victory, John Henry is apologizing to his fans. He's apologizing to his team. Saying, I'm sorry what I did. It was stupid. I shouldn't have done it. I'm sorry. I'm proud for my team. But I'm sorry. Chelsea actually plays Munich in the finals in Munich. He still can't play. His team wins. I don't know how they won, but they win. And they win again. And here's a team celebrating. And John Henry still apologizing to his team that he had failed them. In some ways, that's like God. God has a plan. There are some things in God's plan that will not change, cannot change. And we get to decide, are we going to be a part of that? Are we going to cooperate with God? Or are we going to rebel against it? I believe that God has a plan for this church. And we can choose to either fight it, or we can choose to be part of it. But God's plan will go on. The beauty of God and His will and His will for us is that we can choose to participate with God, or we can choose to be left aside. What we cannot do is thwart God's plans. In the book of Esther, chapter 4, verse 14, people of Israel are facing extermination, and Esther needs to go to the king and say, hey, stop that. And she's not sure she wants to. And Mordecai says, if you don't do this, if you don't go to the king and ask for relief, help will come from some other source, but you and your father's house will be destroyed. God had promised He would never let the people of God be destroyed. And so if Esther chooses not to, God is still true to His word, whether or not Esther participates. And the same thing is true with us. There are things that God is doing in the world. The book of Revelation says there will be some from every tongue, every nation, and every tribe in heaven worshiping God. We can't alter that plan. They will be there. We can choose to participate, or we can choose to fight. But God's plan will be done. So the decisions that we make on a daily basis, we cannot live as if there is no God. It's very easy. I can go to work and not think about God all day. You know, I'm going to get busy, I'm going to make decisions, I'm going to do my thing, and then thoughts about God or what God wants for me or God's will, it's very easy not even think about that throughout the course of a day. And that's foolish. Because God, He created the world, He created us, He created everything. We must take His plan and His will into account when we make decisions. If we choose what college we go to, what employment we're going to have, where we're going to live, what church we're going to get involved in, how we're going to raise our children, we must live and act in a way, understanding that God is in control and that we will either fight Him and not get anywhere, or we can cooperate with Him. Here, people of Israel, they go away, never come back. They go off into captivity. God brings them back because God's plan will not be thwarted. God said they would always have a place here in the promised land. God has done that and brings them back. And so when we make decisions on a database, are we going to be honest today? Are we going to cheat on tests? Are we going to cheat people at work? Are we going to be honest and forthcoming? Those decisions have a lasting impact. Those decisions, we can either choose to cooperate with God. And then lastly, when we make those decisions, we need to go to the, God wants us to go to the people He has placed in our lives to help us make those decisions. Some decisions are easy. Hey, should I lie? Should I pray? Should I witness to my neighbor? Those are all easy. Hey, what college should I go to? Those decisions are deeper. Who should I date? What kind of people should I be friends with? Those are decisions we need advice in. Not when you're a teenager, certainly when you're a teenager, when you're 20, when you're 30, when you're 75 years old. Those are decisions that we need each other for. And lastly, we need to be, church, the kind of people that people can go to for advice. That when someone has a question about the will of God, that we know God well enough and have read His word and pray that we can be the kind of people you can go to for advice that can be trusted.